Hello, friend. Welcome back to another episode of the Shanti Ma podcast. This is episode 23. Have you ever experienced deep shame after expressing anger, even though you had a good reason to be angry in the first place? What about being shamed and contained by others for expressing an emotion, so you decide to stuff them down instead? After all, good girls don't get angry, don't cause waves, and are supposed to be nice. But what's the cost of not expressing your emotions? In today's episode, I sit down with medicine woman, sound alchemist, and sister, Vailana Marcus. In this conversation, we discuss her journey, exploring how she healed, transformed, and learned to integrate anger in an incredibly powerful way, channeling the archetype Kali Ma. More often than not, anger is signaling to us that something is out of alignment, such as a violation of our boundaries or a relationship that isn't healthy for us. We dive into healing within a safe container, aka sacred union, how to release self-judgment, love ourselves unconditionally, and move into an authentic self-expression. This was such a healing conversation, loaded with golden nuggets of wisdom. I know you guys are going to love it and get a lot out of it. I know I sure did. You may even want to listen to it a few times. And before we jump in, a friendly Shanti service announcement. If you enjoyed today's episode, please head over to Apple and leave your girl a review. Reviews help expand the show to a larger audience, but most importantly, supports my plan for world domination. Yes, I understand jokes are illegal nowadays, so in case I have to say it, I am kidding. You can also subscribe and or follow to stay up to date with my latest episodes. All right, without further ado, please welcome the wonderful and the powerful Vailana Marcus. Welcome to my podcast, Vailana.
So excited to be here, beautiful. We finally did it.
Yes. Yes, we did. With some determination, we made it happen.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. If you guys only had any idea what all happened right before this, you would be laughing hysterically. Here we are.
And here we are. We made it happen. So we had a conversation a few months ago, and it was about embracing your inner Kali, this, I guess that would be like your fierce inner goddess archetype. Because I think so often women are told, be nice, don't cause waves. You know, being angry is kind of seen as this ugly thing for women, but you know, the cost of not speaking up and the cost of not saying how you feel, even if sometimes it is expressed through anger, can be almost like this, you know, self-betrayal. At least that's kind of my understanding of it. But then there's so much shame around expressing anger to begin with. So I wanted to explore your journey with anger, because you have embraced this inner Kali so beautifully. So I think you'd be the perfect person to talk about this.
Amazing. Yeah. Anger has been quite a journey for me. I've always had, you know, there's another goddess in Hawaiian mythology called Madame Pele. She's the goddess of the volcano. And she feels very much like this same strand of an expression of the divine feminine as Kali Ma. They're both, you know, like if you think of the energy of the volcano, it erupts, it incinerates everything in its path. It literally destroys, but it destroys to create new life. Within days, you know, the richest fertile life is growing. It's how all of the islands are created. It's this beautiful cycle of destruction and creation. And Madame Pele, you know, is a symbol of that energy. And, you know, in Hawaii, when people talk about Madame Pele, you know, she's vicious. And I've seen in the women in my family my whole life, this very, you know, they're very loving and bright and carry the aloha spirit. But if you push past their boundaries, I mean, they have this like fierce kind of, you know, crazy energy that comes out that kind of erupts as anger or rage. So my initial relationship to anger was actually a fear of it, because I was on the other side of it, you know, as a child. If I was punished for something, I was on the other side of my mother's anger. And so there was a big part of me, because I knew what it was like to be on the receiving end of unintegrated and what you could say was like more shadowy, you know, an expression of anger in its shadow. It's like anger and not having awareness around it. That's just like the reactive, you know, kind of anger. I didn't want to express it. I didn't want to be like my mom, you know, because I knew what it felt like to receive that from her. So for a very, very long time, I repressed that energy, because I'm like, I'm not that. And also, you know, as children, we're conditioned, particularly as women, when you're acting out in very raw, powerful emotions, it's like everything in your environment is trying to contain that. Like, I would get in trouble for having, you know, for expressing my emotions in a way that was really free and authentic. And so that also, you know, kind of became this element that was just containing it and shoving it down, essentially. So from my own ways of trying to survive in love, in as being a child and not wanting love to be withdrawn from me, I learned very well how to repress anger. You know, mm-hmm. like as much as I could feel it, I would never let myself go there. Like, I would just be this steady, you could be saying whatever to me. And this came up kind of, you know, when I started to be in relationships with the masculine, when I was in my late teens, you know, if there was some kind of conflict, I could just be this like stoic, almost like shut off, dissociated, disconnected, like standstill, because I didn't want to dance with that energy, because it felt ugly. I had judgment around it. I had judgment of the way my mom expressed it. And I continued to just like, you know, keep it down until I was like a ticking time bomb. And eventually I would just explode. It was like when my boundaries were crossed, or when things went too far. And this, you know, arised it mostly in relationships, when things would go too far, then I was like the explosive volcano. I could say the sharpest things. Like, I could do, you know, I would say and do things that I would be, that were incredibly reactive, that I would be really ashamed of afterwards. Because when I was in that place, that it was almost like seeing red all of a sudden. It's like, I'm fine. I'm repressing. I'm holding it down. But then you crossed me too much. And then I would just boom. Then there it was. Then I would say, you know, all of these things that would just come through my mind that was to cut, that was to be hurtful, you know, that was to hurt back, that was to fight back. And every time I would make it through that energy and calm down, I would be so ashamed for how hurtful I was, because like the fact that I could actually, that energy could actually come out of me, I'm like, how can I even be this person? You know, but the cycles that I was creating was repression and then explosion. There was no middle ground of, you know, what is this anger telling me, and how can I listen to it, and how can I be with it in a healthy way? It was purely, I'm either going to shut it completely down, or I'm going to erupt like the volcano. So then what came after that, after I had expressed, you know, in former partnerships where there was a lot of betrayal and toxicity, when I would express that, what I would call the shadowy expression of Kali energy, which is unintegrated anger, which is anger that is aiming to hurt, anger that is aiming to cut, you know, when I would express that and then feel the shame afterwards, I'd be so hard on myself and so judgmental that I couldn't bear it. So the next mechanism that I developed was avoidance. I knew that if I was in a conversation with somebody and that energy was bubbling up, I knew how sharp and vicious I could be. So instead of staying there when there wasn't communication, I would leave. I would leave to save them and myself from, you know, the eruption and the judgment. And this continues. So that's a really long-winded story of like my entire,
relationship
to anger. But those cycles were moving in my life, you know, in an awareness, in so many different relationship cycles as I continued to shed old layers, re-experience new traumas, shed old layers, you know, until I got to my spiritual journey where I started, you know, in 2016, I started my spiritual journey. It was the first year I ever had done plant medicine. It was when I met my husband, Aubrey, at Burning Man. From then on, all of my emotions, I started to learn how to relate to in a different way. I started to learn how to listen to the signals that the emotions were showing me, like they're literally intelligence. And it wasn't until my former partnership where we were dancing in the realm of polyamory, which wasn't my desire. It was, you know, he had feelings for another person and we were trying to learn how to navigate that. And with all the trauma that I had had in my relationships, you know, prior to that situation, I mean, my nervous system was so in fight or flight and survival constantly with the level of threat that I was feeling from this other woman in the situation that I could no longer successfully go through those cycles of repressing my anger, having the explosion or, you know, being avoidant, you know, I was triggered so often and pretty much every day just trying to be okay, that I really had to reckon with that energy that was beneath, you know, that's always been within me, this incredibly fiery, passionate energy that is literally demanding change. I had to face off with it and I had to get rageful. Like I literally got in, I would go from being totally fine and calm and, you know, spiritual and empathetic and compassionate and trying to see things from a higher perspective. And then all of a sudden I was just like hairpin trigger in rage, because this is another thing that's really difficult when we are repressing our emotions and what's actually happening internally and disempowering ourselves is you're spiritually bypassing, particularly if you're trying to always be light and loving and compassionate and trying to see through others' eyes. All of those things are important. But if you have this gap of where you are in your humanity and where you're trying to reach for this like spiritual ideal, there's all this space in between that's unintegrated. And what happened for me in that space was rage. You know, like I was either trying to live up here and be like, okay, I can see how you feel and love is love and all these things. But my human was like, I feel so threatened and I am so unsafe that I'm going to explode inside. And as soon as there is enough push past my boundaries of feeling safe, I'm going to lose it. Mm. So I had to go into the depths of my shadow and my darkness and finally get to a point where it was so hard for me to not be in a place of reactivity to pretty much everything, because my nervous system was just, you know, fritz to the max, that I made a choice. Like, I can't live like this anymore. This isn't the way that I want to live my life. Like I felt out of control and almost bipolar sometimes, like the levels of, the levels of subconscious things and unconscious things that were happening that I didn't have a grasp on, and how for, you know, in one moment I could be a certain way and then the next be incredibly rageful and angry. Like I literally felt like I had a mental disorder because I was just all over the place. And you know, what I had to do eventually was listen. What does anger want from you? It's intelligence. it is showing you where your boundaries are being crossed. It is showing you where you actually have boundaries. And I ignored them, you know, my entire life for the sake of being loved by other people. I took the conditioning of being passive and being the nice girl and, you know, not being threatening and not being ugly and all these judgments that we grow up with. I took those with me all throughout my life until I got to that place. And I just had to listen to my anger. And it wanted me to see where I had boundaries. It wanted to show me where I was terrified, where I had so much fear, where I didn't feel safe, where the relationship container was not serving me to thrive at all. You know, even though everyone has their own experience, like I was absolutely ignoring my own. And what I came to realize as Kali Ma started to come into my life and started to help me feel empowered in my anger, to look at it as this intelligence that's showing me where I'm out of alignment with myself, you know, then I actually had the space and the opportunity to learn how to be with it in a way where I wasn't repressing it anymore, where I would allow myself to feel it, where I would literally let it burn. What, you know, I would be so present with it. It would just burn away whatever it was necessary. And I would see where I needed to have better boundaries or the change that was being demanded, which is, you know, my own internal compass that I never knew I had all along because I was shaming it, you know? Mm-hmm. That was so all over the place. I hope that that felt clear.
No, it was. No, it definitely was. And, you know, so much of what you're saying, I can relate to massively, because actually that was something that ayahuasca had shown me years ago, was the way that I dealt with conflict. It was like, I always grew up kind of, you know, similar, sort of like explosive, but then sweep it under the rug. And, you know,
yeah,
literally ayahuasca showed me out the door, out the door, out the door, where it was like me like, ah, and then like doors slamming and leaving. And then I got into one relationship that was super, super toxic. And I, like, leaving was no longer an option to go at least cool off. And it just was so volatile. And, you know, that was a place where I think from almost feeling like, you know, okay, I can't express my anger, but then I can't, you know, take off and leave and go deal with it. Yeah. Myself. And so I started to feel kind of like this caged animal. And like, you just have to, like a caged animal, you go crazy. You feel like you're just going to explode. Yeah. And yeah. You know, what I've often noticed is it's perfectly okay in at least, you know, what I've noticed, it seems to be perfectly okay for the masculine to show their fierceness and their rage yeah. and their anger. But when it's you, and often it's that you're just trying to fight to have your needs be met or have your voice yeah. heard or have your feelings considered. So like, mm-hmm. I guess that's a really good point to segue into, you know, how has being able to express your anger and your emotions freely in relationship
yeah.
made such a difference for you versus, you yeah. know, previous life experiences?
Yeah. In previous experiences, the expression of anger, you know, in a codependent kind of relationship where there's this like push-pull energy and the people aren't really seeing each other or loving each other unconditionally, that there's so much judgment, you know, in the expression of authentic emotion. It's like, you're angry, you're evil, you're this, you're that. And I know that very, very well. And I would also turn that in on myself, you know, like in the reflection of them, you know, talking about my anger in the way that they did, I would use that as validation to judge myself. So that was, you know, formerly why I also felt like my anger was so unintegrated, was because I wasn't in a container that could actually hold that fire and still look me in the eye and be able to hold me and say, I love you and your feelings are valid. And, you know, maybe this is crazy and not okay, but I can still be here with you through it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the biggest turning point for me with this is actually a story that's pretty fascinating. And it's the reason that I really invited Kali into my life in a conscious way. She had been trying to come in for a long time unconsciously, but this was the first time I was like, okay, I'm ready to really be with this goddess and allow her to teach me. So Aubrey, my husband, and I rarely fight. It's, you know, we're so incredible at sensing and seeing each other and communicating that when we fight, it's very rare. I wouldn't even call it fighting. It's just when we have conflict, it's very rare. And, you know, we're really, really great at moving through it. And it tends to always be over something really small and stupid. So this one evening, I'm about to leave to do sound healing on the solstice. And we get into this conflict and communication is just like, we're in this place where it's just like, I'm really attached to my story and I'm really attached to my story. So it was kind of like, we weren't really in this place of seeing each other. We were like both in our, you know, holding our ground from our position. And it was the first time that that fire energy came out directed at Aubrey. He's so incredible and loving and wonderful when it comes to conflict. Like he always tries to create love as soon as possible. And it's really helpful for me because sometimes I shut down or I feel dissociated, like all of my protective mechanisms happen, but he's very loving. And this situation didn't turn out that way. And I remembered I got so angry. I left and I just drove off. And then he called me on the phone and he wanted to keep talking. And it was like that fire energy that I have to be just like sharp and cutting. It was like anything to get this to stop is kind of like where my mind's at. And, you know, in that situation from his experience, what he experienced was a withdrawal of my love. Like, it's like, I go from being the most loving to, you know, my love is not there and there's nothing that you can say to try to penetrate my heart. I'm just like, I want this to stop. And that's that. So that really fierce energy that I've been so ashamed of that I've expressed, you know, really only with men in my life came out towards Aubrey. I ended up going and doing the sound healing. It's this beautiful solstice ceremony. And, I come home and I'm feeling much better because I did sound and I was with, you know, beautiful beings. And I go upstairs and he was waiting up there for me to come whenever I was ready. And when I'm talking to him, you know, I told him, I'm so sorry for expressing that energy towards you. I've always had this like volcano energy that can arise, you know, when I feel like my boundaries are being really, really crossed. And it's awful, you know, every single time I feel so guilty about it afterwards because I don't want to hurt you. You don't deserve that. You know, I'm just saying all these things, apologizing for how I was being. And he stops me and he rolls over and he looks at me and he said, it wasn't awful. It was awesome. And I'm like, what the heck is he talking about? Like, you've got to be insane. Like, you know, like, what is this about? So he starts telling me, you know, he had forever this picture of Kali Ma above his altar. And if you haven't seen a depiction of her, you know, she's called the black goddess. She's depicted as being blue or black. And she's got all these arms and in her arms, she has the severed heads of men. And which represent the ego. It's not actually like she's killing men. It's, you know, she devours delusion and the heads represent the ego. She's got a necklace around her neck of a bunch of heads and all the, you know, the blood's hanging out. She's got her tongue out like that. And she's standing on top of Shiva, like on top of him. And he's lying there with his arms back and he's just looking up at her like, oh my goddess. You know, like this crazy, dark, kind of mortifying looking depiction of this fierce, you know, almost huntress looking goddess. And the divine masculine Shiva is underneath her, able to like hold her and love her in all of that fierceness. I actually have, a little thing of her. I'm just going to bring it over. Really
yeah, quick. Please do.
Yeah. So she's got weapons, mm-hmm. and she's got heads, and she's standing on top of Shiva, you know, and the first time I saw this depiction of her, I was so weirded out, you know, like when I saw it above his altar, I'm like, that is so creepy. And why is that woman killing people and standing on top of a man? And why is that above his altar? You know? So essentially what he said was, you know, when I've been in arguments before, I have always been able to outlawyer the other person. You know, when I've been in conflict, the communication was always navigated because he's very smart and he's able to, you know, maneuver things in a way where he could be kind of in the position of control. And he looks at me and he said, and you put me through a paper shredder. He said, I have absolutely no chance against that energy. He said, your Kali energy is so unbelievably strong and it's beautiful. And so this situation might sound crazy. I'm not saying to go, you know, be crazy to your partner and that that's okay and they should love you for it. What happened for me in him holding that reflection to this goddess and the energy that she emulates was that I no longer had to feel shame about that energy. Mm-hmm. He was able to hold me in it and he was able to love me in it. And it gave me the permission to love that about myself. And since that day, which was so wild, I have learned how to be with my anger energy in ways that it almost feels like, you know, when there's an earthquake and there's like a small tremor and it releases pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, when I have that energy come up or that voice in my head that's really sharp, I let it live and breathe and feel. And then I just move back into love. Like I don't have these big explosive experiences anymore where I'm totally fine and then I go to anger or rage. Ever since that moment where he gave me the permission to love myself through that. And that's another aspect that it was really, you know, inviting me to do, was to learn how to love myself mm-hmm. in my darkness and my polarity. Because the repression of it and the judgment of it and the shaming of it is a rejection of yourself. Mm-hmm. If I express in a certain way and I make that wrong, I can never love myself unconditionally. And I can never love others unconditionally because it has to start with you. So there's this really interesting and important integration that can take place when you can learn how to be with your anger energy in a way that is not so hard on yourself or judgmental. And then there's a way that it can be really empowering, you know, like that energy, that fire, we all have it. That fierceness, we all have it. It is so unbelievably repressed in the feminine. And, you know, there's this element of being unapologetic and just empowered. And that's what I feel like the energy of Kali really represents in my life is being that way and learning how to love myself through all aspects of how I express and the being in a relationship where my partner can hold that for me and can hold a loving mirror, even when I'm moving through my shadows, it helps me to continue to up level to new and new levels of consciousness and awareness. Like I never thought would be possible. I thought I was always going to be stuck in just, you know, those cycles that I had talked about earlier. And I truly feel like I have broken free from the cycles and I'm starting to establish a new way of being.
Yeah. Cause you're using your fire to transform that shame. And like, you know, yeah. I can totally understand what you were referring to earlier about, you know, being and feeling like you're this very peaceful spiritual person, but then having this other aspect of yourself that isn't integrated. And so you almost feel like, you know, because there's this imbalance, you almost feel like you're a fraud, because you're like, well, here on one hand, I'm this very peaceful, spiritual person. And then on the other hand, I can be this very cutting, harsh, violent with my words, you know, when I feel threatened. And so being able to feel free to express yourself within a safe container, I think, you know, that's basically transmuting all of that old, also just like generations of like, you know,
oh, for sure,
that being passed down to you, like generations of like the women in our families being like silenced or like not being able to truly express yourself, you know, in all of your unlimited splendor.
And that's the thing that's really, you know, I love what you just mentioned, because, you know, I think on the spiritual path, people really view it as this, like reaching up. I'm reaching up to be up here. And one of the things, I made this, and I mentioned this in a post on my Instagram, something that Aubrey always says to me is your branches can only grow up towards the sun, towards spirit, towards God, as deep as your roots grow down into the earth. It's like, if you are light and love and all these things, your ability for the contrast is there. And it's important to recognize, you know, you can be in a place of choosing, you know what I mean? You don't have to choose to express your darkness, but the acknowledgement that it's there is really, really important. It's like the Star Wars story. You know, I never fully understood how people, you know, in movies and stuff like that, how they choose the darkness. Just like in my mind, I'm like, I would never do that. I can't see through their eyes of why they would want to be in the darkness. And then I had a ceremony where I allowed myself to just feel my own darkness and the allure that's there, and this weird, almost like erotic power. It kind of felt very like snake-like, and I could feel the lure to that. I could feel my own participation in that and toxic relating that I've had in relationships, and when I've been explosive and when I've been shadowy. And the important lesson that I learned from that was the acknowledgement is so important. I have the capacity to be very dark. If I am this loving and I am this light, I have the capacity to be the absolute polarity of that, but I choose not to. You know, doesn't mean I don't ever dance in that realm sometimes. And sometimes, you know, I don't have the ability to be really grounded and centered, and I'm completely imperfect. But the importance of the acknowledgement, you know, that's there, but the choice, you know, to be reaching for the love and the light, and to be the center that is all of it is really important. Cause otherwise I think people, you know, beginning on their spiritual path, and even spiritual communities that I've been around, it's like the darkness is so judged. You know, it's like, I'm very spiritual, and I also like twerking and having a blast and being sexually embodied and moving, you know what I mean? And it has nothing to do with validation or, you know, wanting anyone to look at me in a certain way. It's literally just like, I have both sides. And to not allow yourself to live in all those realms is, you know, it's not really being fully human. It's not really realistic. We didn't come here to just be angels floating around. Like, obviously we want to be loving and light and be of service and all those things, but, you know, dancing in different expressions is also significant and important. And, you know, for me, for a long time on my spiritual path, I was spiritually bypassing my humanness, which turned into a lot more unraveling and ceremony and integration than if I were actually to just be able to sit and be like, okay, I am human being. I can feel my emotions. I am imperfect, and that's okay. They're teaching me always. I'm always going to try to be better, but like, let me be in my human instead of that gap that I was talking about. That's like, my human's over here and where I want to be is here. And all this area is unintegrated and turns out to be shadowy expressions of emotion.
Well, something that you just said that I found really interesting, and it's actually something that I have personally struggled with. And this fly, I have a house fly, keeps flying in front of my face. I'm like, no, you don't care about me the rest. Yeah. I'm like, you don't care about me the rest of the time I'm here. As soon as I'm doing a podcast, you're in my face.
Fly medicine. I have some kind of medicine.
But something you said, and it's actually shame around, you know, sexuality. So I have had, I think I've had like a very difficult time myself just balancing this, you know, spiritual, you know, purity that we're all trying to like attain in some way, but then also that like, you know, powerful sexual goddess like energy. And like, I would say for myself, I think because of some of my career choices in the past, and feeling a lot of shame around maybe being objectified and just not really in a supportive environment, I've now had like a little bit of, well, quite a disconnect of how to blend these two worlds. And then also how much, you know, we get shamed in, you know, society, like, you know, some of the worst name calling and curses are very like derogatory around shaming women's sexuality. Mm-hmm. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm still not totally past the point where people's judgment and shaming, you know, doesn't affect me. Like if somebody posts something negative on my Instagram, which it's not very often, but sometimes like certain things get under my skin a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I feel this desire of like, to be defensive, like you don't know me. You know what I mean? Like it's interesting, but owning your sexuality and your sensuality is so liberating. Like it's so unbelievably liberating. It's the same, you know, Kali energy that's unapologetic. That's, you know, and I know, and I understand the being objectified. Like I did bottle service and I worked in nightlife for pretty much all of my 20s. And, you know, you are the object of the men in there spending a lot of money. And then it's literally like your looks and your body and your personality being used for that. So kind of learning how to come back into a place of feeling like you can be center with it. I think it has everything to do with your relationship with yourself. Mm-hmm. Because if you're really concerned about being objectified, how are you that way with yourself? Like if you're standing from a place of like, I'm really, really grounded in my sexuality and my sensuality. And there's a difference between being grounded in it and looking for attention, you know, like you can sense the energy of somebody that's being a certain way because they want love from their environment. It's essentially what it is. Like,
yeah, the external validation.
We could be judgmental and say that it's like you want attention, but they're literally searching for love because they're not feeling that internally. So it's like, I have to be this way so I can receive love from my environment. But if you could just fully be you, you know, and I love me so much. Like I'm sensual with myself and I hug myself and I love on myself. And when I do ceremony, I look in the mirror and I talk to myself and I thank my body and I tell myself that I'm beautiful. And there's just this relationship that you develop with yourself that I feel like allows all the other layers to kind of fall away a little bit. But it's interesting, like learning how to reassociate your sexuality into something new that's really healthy and embodied versus the way that you've shown up in the past. And a big part of that, you know, kind of crossing the threshold for me was a journey that I did with ayahuasca, where I literally had to move through all the ways that I have betrayed myself, which a lot of it had to do with my sexuality and the energy that I had allowed in my body, you know, searching for love and just looking at from the witness perspective, the consciousness of all parties involved. And it was brutal to see myself as a young woman that was so misguided and so detached from the sacredness of my sexuality, you know, to allow different energies to come in that weren't reverent of the feminine, that weren't respectful or honoring of me. And, you know, ayahuasca helped me to clean and purge a lot of that energy because I was hanging on to that. And in that purge, it really created space for me to harness my sexuality in a way that is unapologetic and also sacred. And I've had a lot of healing as well from, you know, being in my marriage with Aubrey, because it's so safe. And because, you know, the energy of us being intimate with each other, whether it's, you know, being playful and like darker realms of expression, or if it's like really lovemaking, like it's so safe. And I feel so loved and I feel so seen and I feel so honored that it kind of helps me to just like open up and express myself fully, you know, outside of our relationship as well. But I'm not totally to the point where I feel absolutely integrated there. I still think I have a lot of layers of things that I'm shedding and some more resilience that I'm building to the environment.
Well, it's interesting because as you're talking about that, I'm thinking back to, for myself, so much external validation that I experienced around, you know, my appearance or my sexuality. And then a few years ago when I had my car accident and, you know, my, you know, career changed and everything else, and kind of what it, you know, kind of turned my whole world upside down. But what I was left with was, you know, that I didn't have that internal validation to, I think I just not realized that my confidence was reliant upon other people. So being able to work through and process all of that, and like you were saying, coming to the mirror and, you know, seeing yourself and loving yourself. That's like, it's so tricky. It's like, it's like so easy to say it, but it's actually so tricky to really see yourself and be like, I still love you.
Yeah. I actually started a practice a long time ago. That was probably another significant thing that I can share. One New Year's, I decided to start writing myself love letters. And essentially, I was writing to myself almost as if my soul was speaking to me, my ego, me in this physical embodiment. And in this way, that was how I speak to other people. You know, it's so easy for me to love and embrace somebody else for all of who they are. So easy. Like I, my heart is wide open in that way, but how much do I do that with myself? How much do I say endearing things to myself like I do to other people? And like I noticed when I started this practice and started writing myself love letters, it felt awkward because I recognize how much I don't love on myself in that way. And I'm the most important person that I should feel that way towards. So it was in the beginning, it was really edgy of just getting used to that dialogue, you know, and the journaling practice, you know, it almost felt like it created grooves in my brain where I would speak to myself really endearing things. So then it almost became habitual. So even if I wasn't writing in my journal, when something was happening, the way I would show up for myself was with way more compassion instead of just, you know, that harsh inner critic and judge that's like, you weren't perfect, you failed, you fucked this up, like, what's wrong with you? Like, get it together. Like, that used to be the chatter in my head before. And starting that journaling practice helped me to kind of repattern my inner voice in those moments where I actually needed a lot of love from myself, you know? Those really hard moments where I wish I would have had, you know, my mom there to tell me it was okay. I started to develop that kind of relationship with myself. And so I'm like, I want to have a really loving inner voice. So how can I establish that in the way that I live? And it started with that journaling practice. And, you know, I do rituals every day where I'm getting really in tune with myself, where I can feel where I'm out of alignment with love, whether it's towards myself, whether I'm having judgment, whether it's towards another, towards a situation where I'm shaming or guilting myself, or like all these things. Like I tune in with myself as a ritual every day to see where I'm out of alignment with love, because love to me is truth. So if I'm out of alignment with love, I'm not fully living in my truth. So I'm going to find the pathway to get back to that, however I can, you know, as quickly as possible. And also honoring, you know, my emotions and grieving and whatever it is that I need to move through. But my North Star is always, how do I return to resonance with love?
Yeah, actually, I started doing something similar, and the awkwardness of looking at yourself in front of the mirror at first, and especially if maybe you are in shame. I mean, it's so easy when you're feeling really good to look in the mirror and be like, you're so cute. And then when you're in shame,
when I wake up in the morning and my hair is like dreadlocks and I'm like, my face is swollen and it looks like I got, you know, in a fight while I was sleeping, to like wake up in the morning when I'm there and like don't have makeup on and I'm just bare, you know, and I'm, you know, how can I be with myself there in a way that's loving, not just when I'm all done up and I feel cute and
exactly.
Really important. Yeah. It's also, it's really helpful for me to have the mirror of my husband. 'Cause you know, anytime I'm not being in love with myself, he's a really great, he points it out to me, you know, when I'm being harsh with myself or when I'm not, you know, even with like face stuff. Like one time I tried to do my lips and it was crazy. I didn't get very much done, but I was like, you know, being judgmental, because when I smile, my top lip kind of goes away, and, you know, did my upper lip, and I looked insane. It was like 2 weeks that was just so swollen and crazy. And then when it went down, you couldn't even notice at all. But he's like, he's so loving about just allowing me to make my own choices and do what I got to do, but to just always be the reminder that like, you're amazing as you are. You can make all these choices that you want to, you know, validate yourself in the ways that you need, but it's like, you don't have to do that. You can do it if you want, but you don't have to. And it's like, it's always, he's a really great reminder. Yeah.
Well, that would be a good place to come to for, you know, anyone that's listening and maybe they aren't necessarily in a conscious relationship and they're struggling to, you know, find their voice or to feel, you know, loving with themselves, even though there's shame and there's anger and there's repressed feelings and emotions. What would be like your recommendation for like getting clear on your boundaries and your standards? Like, what would you tell somebody? How would they go about that?
Yeah. There was actually a woman recently that asked me, something along those lines. My answer was pretty simple. Like when I used to work with a spiritual coach, a spiritual mentor when I was in my former partnership, and she would ask me about my boundaries, you know, when I was going through this very difficult relationship. And I literally was kind of like a deer in the headlights, like, boundaries. I don't know. Like, I've never really thought about it. And I would literally think about it, but there was this block that I had that was so clear, because I knew if I had boundaries, I wasn't going to be in the relationship anymore, because my boundaries were conflicting with his desires. And it just, it was out of alignment, you know, in its authenticity. And so what I learned later was that your emotions are the signals of where you have boundaries. If you feel frustrated, especially if you feel anger, it's showing you where you have a boundary that you're ignoring. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way, is like really tuning in with your emotions of when you're not feeling joy and love and light, when you're feeling denser energies or frustration or anger, you know, whatever kind of energy it might, whatever emotion it may be, that doesn't feel juicy and good. that's a signal of something that's happening where you're out of alignment with yourself, where you're out of integrity with your needs or your boundaries. And those are the signals. It's like, it might not come super clear where it's like, oh, I have this boundary here. Mm-hmm. But just if you can be in the space of listening to those times and being with yourself about it, like write about it, talk to yourself about it. If you want to go for a walk in nature and talk to the earth about it and do something where you can be in the practice of really like seeing yourself and reflecting on what's happening for you. And they'll point the arrows to exactly where you need to have boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I think often what happens is, especially when we weave in issues around self-love, self-worth, and the lack thereof, there's a tendency to settle, like you said, you know, your needs aren't being met or your boundaries are being crossed. So if you stand up for yourself, you know that you could experience this loss and, you know, maybe sort of an unhealthy sort of perspective on, you know, what you are worth and what you deserve, you know, when mm-hmm. you're in those places, because, you know, how often, you know, and I can speak personally from things I've tolerated in my own life where, you know, you tolerate so much because it's like you almost don't believe you deserve better.
You don't believe that you're worthy of your needs. Mm-hmm. You don't believe that you are worthy to experience your needs and your desires. That's that word that felt like it was like a blinking light. If you feel like you're tolerating something, you're subjecting yourself to the belief that like, it's okay for me to have a mediocre life. It's okay for me to have a relationship that's fine. You know, mm-hmm. but like, do you want a relationship and a life that makes you feel like you're thriving? That's mm-hmm. reflecting back to you the magnificence that you are, mm-hmm. you know, like you, it comes from the place of feeling like you are worthy for your needs to be met. You know, and that can be a really difficult thing for people. And I can really relate to this because when I got to the place of really standing for myself, I don't even want to say standing up for myself because that sounds like fighting, but like mm-hmm. standing for myself and really, truly, authentically from my heart speaking my desires. It wasn't like, these are my desires and you have to meet them. And this is this. It's like, this is just really like raw, like where my raw heart lies. This is what I really, really desire in a relationship. Like this is where, you know, this is where I feel threatened. This is where I feel fearful. This doesn't feel good to me and it doesn't really support my thriving. And coming to a place of that acknowledgement, it might mean that you go separate ways in the relationship that you're in, because that might really bump up against, you know, the other persons. And that's a difficult place to stand in, because for one, you feel like you're losing love, which is really hard, you know, if you really love the person. But what you're doing in that situation is you're choosing you. Mm-hmm. And the universe listens to that. If you stand forward and you say, I'm choosing me, I'm worthy of receiving the life that I want to experience. I don't know how it's going to come to me. I don't know if you're the person it's going to be with, but I believe that I'm worthy of it. And I know it's coming to me as long as I can be, you know, soft boundaries, like really hard boundaries are, you know, people can use them in ways that aren't healthy. Like this rigid is my boundary.
And militant.
Yeah. It's not boundaries is not being that way. It's like, you know, this is what I see as helping my life to thrive. And this is what I'm willing to accept and what I'm willing to not accept. And it doesn't have to be this like harsh. It's just like, you can still be curious about your boundaries and they can always change. But, you know, for me, where I'm at right now, like this is where I'm at. And this is protecting my love and my thriving and my nourishment and my feelings of safety. And that might mean that you don't stay in a relationship with somebody, and that can be really, really hard. And I've been through it and I get it, but I can tell you from my personal experience, and I don't believe I know anything. I don't think I'm like, you know, I don't think I know the way. I know what has worked for me. And when I chose myself, really for the first time in my life, I really chose myself from a place that was loving, from a place that was calm, you know, and peaceful. When I really chose myself, I felt so empowered. No relationship could give me the feeling of being so fulfilled in the way that I was, because I really loved myself the most. That didn't mean that there wasn't the grief of the relationship ending and the pain and moving through all those other things. All those things were there, but I never felt so empowered in my life. Mm-hmm. And I manifested the most beautiful partnership I could ever imagine. And it happened quickly. You know, I got to this place where I was like, universe, this is the love I desire to experience. This is how I want to feel. I want somebody to cherish me. I want them to come up behind me when I'm washing the dishes and just hug me and kiss me on the neck, just because they love me, not because I asked, not because they want anything from me, just because they love me. I want to feel cherished like that. I want to deepen my love and sexuality. Like, I want all of these things, and I don't know when it's going to come, and I'm okay with that. This is my prayer, and I know that it will make its way to me, because I won't allow anything else. And I'm that worthy of that kind of love. And it was like, okay. Because for the first time in my life, I chose myself. And for the first time in my life, I really understood what I wanted in a relationship. And I don't know that it works that way. Like, I think there's a lot of spiritual things that were happening, you know, with Aubrey and I, and a lot of messages we had received. But like, I really think if you're so clear about the way you want to feel in a situation, it doesn't even have to be in a relationship. It could be with a job or, you know, something else. And you say that prayer, like it's a declaration to the universe. Like, this is what I want. These are my needs. This is what I want. I'm unattached to how it comes to me. I have no idea. My mind has no idea. I don't know what he looks like. I don't know what he's going to be like. I don't know what he's going to do in life, but like, this is what's important to me. And I'm open to receiving it in the way that you see is best. Turns life into this like really beautiful game to kind of like move through manifestation and in that kind of surrendered way.
Yeah. Like you were saying, getting clear on what you want, because often I think maybe we don't know what we want, or we think that this is, you know, what it's supposed to be like. So like we were coming back to sort of the settling, because you think, well, maybe if you don't know what a good example of that relationship looks like, because you've never seen it or experienced it, never seen it growing up, you can be kind of confused about what love is supposed to be like. I think a lot of people think love is supposed to hurt.
Love is supposed to hurt, and you're supposed to compromise. Mm-hmm. And love is hard. Mm-hmm. All of those stories are so prevalent and so conditioned. And I was subject to them for forever. And the point that you're making is really valid, because when I got clear about what it was I wanted, I met two of my best friends. They're still, you know, my really good friends to this day. And their love inspired me so much. I finally had a model of what I wanted, how I wanted to experience love. Their relationship was so beautiful. They have kids that are all grown, you know, like they're 18 and up, and they are so in love and, you know, sensual with each other. And it's like, they're so attached to each other. It's like, wow, like your love is unreal. And I've never seen anything like it. Something so healthy and conscious, and they hold the same vision and their sexual embodiment still, you know, even though they have grown kids, like all these different elements of who they are as beings and what their union is like. It showed me a model for what I wanted. So that was a really, really, really good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd say that that's what you and Aubrey are doing for a lot of people as well. You guys are kind of modeling what is possible. And I think that's so beautiful about your union, is because, mm-hmm. you know, it's so funny, because like before I had you know, kind of start chatting with you guys a little bit. You know, I see just the image and I, you know, listen to the podcast and I'm like, oh, like, you know, this is beautiful. But then actually starting to, you know, chat with you, I'm like, you guys are exactly how you present yourselves. What you see is what you get. You guys are very, you know, genuine. Which is like, you know, why I think I felt so touched by, you know, like creating the art and kind of connecting with you guys that way, which is kind of a crazy story. Cause you know, you know, you really are showing people that conscious love does exist. And for so many of us, like maybe, you know, you want that, but you're still, I feel it's kind of like, you know, with manifesting, when you're like, I know I can manifest money, you're like, now I know I can manifest more money. Like you can, you know, that you have the ability to manifest things, but until you have the experience of being able to do that, it's just an idea. It's not tangible.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So to be able to get clear on what you want and think, okay, well, I want this kind of a relationship, but you're still battling with the, I don't know if I deserve it or I'm worthy of it.
Yeah. There's so many elements to it for sure. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's our relationship. My hope of, you know, being with him has been really drawn me into, you know, a public audience, just like a public expression more so than I have ever had. And my really great hope is that we can be inspiring for people to see that it is possible. Like, I don't think that we're special, you know, I don't think that we're, you know, we're our own expressions of soul and embodiment as humans. But like, I don't think that only we get to experience this thing that we're having. I think that we had done the work internally for so long to learn how to love ourselves, for all of us, for, you know, for everything that we are. And that love being so fulfilling that it's like, I don't need partnership. I don't need career. I don't need, you know, like for me to be in nature with music and a journal, I feel like I'm so alive. I don't need anything.
Right.
Everything else is just a bonus. But so when you're coming from that place where your cup feels so full internally, you're not trying to fill it with making this much money or this kind of career or how many Instagram followers you have or like all these things. Like those are, you know, they can be great and useful, but they're also ways to like fill up the cup, you know, that's inside that's filling it up, you know, from the external. And Aubrey just walked in here.
Hello, hello.
He's being so cute. but yeah, it's very, very important to do the work on establishing the truth that is inherent truth, that you are worthy of everything that you desire. You are absolutely worthy of it. It's so, and the simple thing about it is it's just simply true. We all are. I'm not any different. You're not any different. Aubrey's not any different. There's no person that's on this scale of being more or less worthy. Like we're all worthy of living a beautiful, thriving life, you know, and where our heart is directed, where our passion is directed, like those things are calling to us because we're worthy of them and because they want us to experience them. So, my advice for anyone that's in the place of, you know, calling in a partner and getting really clear about what it is you want, something that was really helpful for me was understanding not necessarily like details of what I wanted. It was how I wanted to feel, you know, it was how I wanted to feel. Like I really wanted to feel safety. I really wanted to feel like I could express myself in any way and that it wouldn't be threatening to somebody, you know, even my anger and my darker expressions. Like, I wanted to feel safe in love. Mm-hmm. was a big thing. So getting clear about the ways that you want to feel and have a lightness with it, you know, not like the thing that I really establish with myself all the time is curiosity. I don't think I know anything. I might, you know, have a sense for things and believe things. And I could, you know, I'm sitting here talking about all these things that maybe some people will be inspired by or feel guidance, you know, with, but I don't think my ego knows anything. There is so much more at work that we can't see, you know, this fabric of life that is constantly weaving and moving through cycles. Like, I have this curiosity every single day. Like, this is what I want. That might not even be the thing. It might not even be the thing, mm-hmm. you know, like you might be wanting that thing to learn that it's actually not the thing so that it can guide you to this thing. Like, if you can have a curiosity with life and the way that it moves, even when things are difficult, it can be so helpful to not be so attached to the way that the ego thinks that things should be. That an attachment is like really, an attachment and curiosity is really important, because then I think you're just like, you're in this vibration where you're just so open and you're kind of like, I'm cool with whatever, you know, like I'm just going to be vibrating really high and be loving and, you know, be in this place. And I'm going to be so open and it turns you into a magnet for the things that you want. But the really, really, really important key is allowing yourself, giving yourself the permission to understand the simple truth that you are absolutely worthy. Hmm. Doesn't matter what you've done. Doesn't matter what you've been through. Doesn't matter what limitations that you have. Like, you are absolutely worthy. And that belief is so significant.
Hmm. It's so interesting, because when that little self-worth thing comes up for me, I'm like, worthy of what? If you actually start to question worthy of what, you're like, I don't know. I literally know this is just a nonsense belief, but yet so many people do struggle with that. So a couple it's of also things.
It's also sort of a safety mechanism. Because if you stay in a place of being small and being unworthy, you almost don't put yourself out there enough to feel like failure or rejection, or, you know, there's also that element of it. That's kind of like, if I'm unworthy, if I keep this story and hold it to me tight, then I can stay small. And right. then if I stay small, then I don't have to feel obliterated by life. So like that's also another element of it, but I'll let you continue with what you were going to say.
No, that's so true. The whole sort of notion of rejection, actually somebody in my spiritual satsang had asked, like, how do I not experience and feel rejection? And, you know, like, that's one of the aspects of life that I feel like you can't really avoid or escape unless you play small. And how mm-hmm. often so many people do play small, because that fear of, like, that hurt and rejection is so much greater. But, you know, even for me, like, doing my very first podcast, I cried. I was like, oh my God, it's out there now. Like, who am I? I know nothing. And my partner just kind of like, it's like, you're okay. You'll be okay. Like, you know,
yeah.
Because you can totally sometimes get in your own way of exploring your own journey and that growth of, you know, I don't have to necessarily be perfect to do something, but I can still go for it. And yeah. a lot of people get hung up on, I have to be perfect, but it's not even yeah. like perfection is not even real.
It's not even real. And yeah. That could be an entire other podcast, me talking about my perfectionism. So I just won't expand there.
But
yeah, the resistance that comes up with the mm-hmm. resistance that comes up with that is, can be debilitating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that very well.
So you would say be curious and fill your own cup are two of the most important things, along with getting really clear on what you want. And being okay with maybe walking away from something or someone that's no longer serving you.
Yeah. And something to that last point is, if you're hanging on to something that really isn't serving you, that's taking up residence in your energy space, in your energy field, in your spiritual space. And you're not creating the space for something that actually does serve you until you're able to, you know, surrender and let go of some of those attachments. It's a really important thing to recognize when you're in relationships with people that don't really feel rewarding and fulfilling and, you know, like you're thriving. It can definitely turn into something where it's actually taking up space for something that actually could serve you.
Mm. So, Vailana, do you have any workshops or any other things that you have coming up that you want to drop on here?
Yeah, I have. I actually did my first women's retreat in Sedona last month. It was so magical and amazing. I did it with my sister, Adrienne Ellison, and the Alpus Project. We are doing a virtual summit for anyone to join, and it's going to be a really cool structure. I think that she's pricing it in two different ways, where you can actually hold a ceremony space with people in your community. So for other women that you want to be around and you want to go through this virtual summit where there's going to be a bunch of different facilitators, you can actually be the leader that's creating the space and guiding them through it. I have to get the exact dates. It's the second to last weekend of July. So it's going to be next month, and I'll be posting about it on my Instagram. I'll send you some links so that you can connect it here. And then, I'm also one of the coaches for my husband's Fit for Service Fellowship Mastermind. And we are in our second trimester right now, which is going through the different elements of the divine masculine. Our next trimester should be beginning in August, I believe. No. Last trimester. I should know this. This is so terrible. The last trimester, I'll also get that dialed in with you, is going to be about sacred union. And our last trimester summit will be located in Sedona. That's the only one that you can do through the end of the year, because we're already in our second trimester. But if you want a truly life-changing experience, it's one of the most beautiful things that I've ever been a part of, and an absolute honor to be of service to people in that way. So I also have an album coming out sometime this summer. Recorded an album with my husband, Aubrey Marcus, and a brother of ours, Porangi, Eric Zhang, and Amani from Desert Dwellers and Liquid Bloom. It's going to be
amazing.
Yeah, it's a journey. It's music, but it's really creating an experience. And so we go through breath work, ecstatic dance, prayer, meditation, and we recorded it last month in Sedona, and it is unbelievable. It's getting mastered right now, so it should come out sometime this summer. Anything that I'm releasing will be up on my Instagram at Vailana Marcus. And yeah, I'm around doing all sorts of things all the time.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. It's been so nice. Glad we could
do it. Wonderful. Finally, we did it.
Yes. Yay. Well, thank you so much. And you have yourself a wonderful evening. And
thank you.
I'll talk to you very soon.
All right. Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Shanti Ma Podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you did, please subscribe and leave a review. Peace and love. Until next time.